Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. I hope everyone is having a lovely day, blessed day. This is your host, Corinne Lafont of Between the Lines Empowering Network. Today we're going to be talking about, well, I don't want to say religion, but it is a religious issue. And the question is really, you know, really does God exist? And when he doesn't make sense, we all go through this. Speak the truth, people. This is a truth speaking session this morning, episode this morning. Yeah, we're facing the truth. We're coming straight up with reality here. And I have a wonderful guest, and he is going to be sharing some personal issues. I don't know how he managed to, but I know it's only with God that he's able to do that. So I don't want to take up too much of the time. I'm just going to do a quick intro on him. He is a career Air Force and corporate pilot. David Ingerson, who is our guest today, has trained and led teams on short-term missions in Asia. Through hard lessons as an entrepreneur, he encourages others to admit their challenges and disappointments and learn to rise above those difficulties. Through his story of triumph, through tragedy, he spurs others to overcome and rise above life's frustrations. He and his wife, Kathleen, parents of five children, make their home in Shreveport, Louisiana. He's doing a giveaway today. We're going to hear more about that. And that giveaway is really a free copy of his book, The Caleb Years, and you'll find out about Caleb in a little bit. The Caleb Years to the first three persons who requested from his webpage, and his webpage is, I'm not going to say www, although I just said that, but okay. TheCalebYears.com, and I'm going to post that link for you so you don't have to worry about writing it down. It will be just a matter of clicking. And select order directly from order. Please follow up with him by contacting him through his contact page on his website at TheCalebYears.com. So all of that will be posted later. Don't stress yourself over it. We're going to invite David Ingerson on right now. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Karine.
Good morning, my dear. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you. I mean, I love talking to people from the military. We were conversing prior to the show going live, and I learned two things today, people. Two things. When you say copy and when you say Wilco. So nobody have anything on me today. Okay? Okay, I learned two things. And that's the beauty about when I have guests. I learn, even if it's one thing or two things, I can learn something and take away. And then what I do with it, don't tell anybody. I show off. I go out there and I said, Wilco or copy. Okay? So nobody has anything on me today. But David, let's get right into it, David. The Caleb years. And, you know, how does that story, that tragedy into triumph, work for you? Because we're talking today about, does God exist? Does, you know, when God doesn't make sense? And I'm saying that within a context of a lot of things, not only through your family issue, but also through what's happening in the world today. There's so much happening, the earthquake, you know, the Nepal thing, the Chile thing, the people over in the Middle East. I mean, what is going on? They're persecuting, killing Christians. You know, I mean, even in Jamaica here where we are broadcasting from, we have our own issues here where they're murdering young children. You know, this what is happening? I mean, we question a lot of stuff. And amazingly, we watch these things on the news, David, and we say that's happening to them over there. Yeah, to them over there. But when it comes closer to home, like in your home, then it becomes real. Yeah, then it becomes real and it hurts you more. And that's when you start to question, where is God? Does he really exist? Why is he making all these things happen? Tell us. I mean, you have been through your own. You are a man, 24 years in the military and still involved. You know, you have seen a lot, experienced a lot. Five children, you're a father. You know, you're a husband. Tell us your story. Share with us your own experience. Help us today, please.
Thank you, Corinne. You know, one thing that I would say at the outset is that our faith in God has been with us for many, many years. I was a young man in the military, 18 years old, when I encountered a real, genuine faith in God, in Jesus Christ. But I'll tell you this, until that faith is tested, really, sometimes it's rather plastic, rather religious-like. When our fourth child was born in Okinawa, Japan, where I was stationed with the U.S. Air Force, we were absolutely shocked to learn within hours of birth that this child was not like the elder three, who were completely normal and healthy. This child looked normal on the outside, with one exception. I'll explain momentarily. But within hours, we discovered he was anything but normal. He had a number of life-threatening congenital anomalies of birth defects that were not diagnosed in the womb. And the story of his birth is actually rather fascinating. It's actually described in chapter one of my book, The Caleb Years. But just to simply explain, toward the end, right after he was born, and he was born very, very quickly because the water broke in the night. And as we woke up that morning around 6 a.m., our bed was filled with water, so we went to the hospital, the military hospital. And it was not until 6 hours later, noon, that finally the baby was born, and labor was not progressing, so we requested a drug called Pitocin that induces labor. My wife had used it once before. We knew it worked very quickly for her. We warned the nursing staff. They ignored us. So finally, at the last moment, as my wife was squatting outside the bed, ready to deliver the baby herself, the nurse took us seriously. She grabbed a doctor walking by in the hallway who was an ENT, ear, nose, and throat specialist. Mm-hmm. This gentleman came in laughing, joking. It was all a good, merry old time. I was making jokes. And I said to him, I thought I'd deliver myself until you showed up. But within just a few moments of birth, as he was tending to my wife and I was over with the brand new, newly delivered baby, something so compelling, Corrine, I'd never experienced before or since, overwhelmed me, and I just had this irrepressible urge to roll the child over, spread his little cheeks, you understand, his backside, and have a little quick inspection. I had never done that before or since, and I don't know what caused that compelling urge that day, but what I saw changed my life. The doctor noticed this odd inspection when he was, like I say, 10, 15 feet to my right, tending to my wife, and he suddenly wrinkled his brow and he said, well, David, what are you doing? And I said, this is curious, doctor, the garage door is closed, meaning the child had no anal opening. It was just a flap of skin inside his nicely formed normal cheeks. And within moments, suddenly all jokes ended. Within moments, there was a neonatologist in the room who, with a foreboding look in his face, said to me, as he slowly nodded his head, he said, we will check his heart. Of course, as a pilot, I scoffed at him. He said, what do you mean his heart? Doctor, look, he's pink. He's perfect. 10 fingers, 10 toes, a minor problem in the back end. I'm sure we can fix that easily. There's nothing wrong with his heart. And the doctor just continued his slow nod as he said, sometimes anal rectal malformations are associated with cardiac defects. Corrine, those words were like a board slamming me in the face, and I began to realize this may be more than we had anticipated. So within hours of birth, he was diagnosed with a tracheoesophageal fistula, which means his trachea is not connected to his stomach, but rather his esophagus is. Very dangerous, because there's a danger of aspirating, meaning choking and you know, aspirating, dying of something from the stomach, even fluid in the womb, going across that fistula, that opening through the trachea into the lungs. Furthermore, his esophagus is not connected to his stomach. He had something called esophageal atresia. I describe it as the esophagus was ended in a capped-off pipe just in the middle of his chest. So these problems were serious, and the fistula between the esophagus and trachea were serious enough that before sending him on an urgent medical evacuation flight to California, he had to have surgery to ligate that fistula, meaning to close off that connection between the esophagus and trachea. So within 6 hours of birth, he underwent surgery. The next morning at 6 a.m., not even 24 hours after birth, he was sent via an urgent medical evacuation flight, a military flight, that my wife and I were able to accompany him to California, and thus began our odyssey of of 10 major surgeries, 5 open heart surgeries over the course of 3.5 years, and unfortunately, during his 3rd open heart surgery, the child was infected with HIV due to contaminated blood transfusion. And that's part of the core of our story, because the donor knew of his at-risk behavior. Nonetheless, he donated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure we'll get to that later. I'll leave it at that for now. But just to jump back and explain really where the book came from, I would say this. I've journaled my entire life. And this journaling, some people will say a diary, just writing my thoughts and what's happening in my heart and life, never thinking it would ever be shared with anyone else. During this period of our life, during our child's early years that we've called the Caleb years, they're synonymous for years of struggle for us. My journaling was vociferous. I would write for middle of the night hours expressing my angst and agony. It was one way that helped me maintain my sanity during the tumultuous years of this child's early life. And years later, I reflected back and began to realize I was forgetting some of those really exciting times when the child was young. And it isn't just that it was exciting in a very good way. Sometimes excitement can be in a not so good way, but nonetheless, it affects you for your whole life. And I wanted to be reminded of some of these lessons, these stories. So I read back into my journal, and as I began to read, I began to realize, I think there's a story that's compelling that could be helpful for someone else, because here's the real point. Everyone goes through difficulty and disappointment in life. And if we have a faith in our Maker, in our God, what do we do when it seems as though he's silent, when it seems as though our prayers bounce off the ceiling, when it seems as though what he's allowing to happen does not make sense? For those many who died in the tsunami in Indonesia, and you've already mentioned the conflict in the Middle East today, and of course we're hearing of this rioting in Baltimore and other places. When these things happen and people get hurt, innocent people get hurt, where is God? And what do we do when he doesn't make sense? And I don't necessarily write my book in a way that says, this is what you do, lesson 1, 2, 3. No, I simply tell my story. And in the telling of it, we're not perfect. We didn't keep our faith intact perfectly. We're honest. You can see our angst and our agony. I think there may be some tears when you read our story, and there may be some laughter. And ultimately, I think it will lead you to think about your own story. We all have one. And what are we doing during these times when, in our lives, God doesn't make sense? Do we turn our back on all that's good and right and wholesome and become a person that's not happy to be around, that's not pleasant to be around? Or do we choose to overcome? We don't ignore the difficult emotion. We embrace them and live through them and choose not to be conquered by them or defined by them. When I was in a pit of deep despair, so deep, I would have to cover my face with a pillow at night, night after night, weeping. I was on a military duty where the gentleman sleeping in the room next to me, I was afraid might hear me, even though the walls were thick, heavy concrete and the doors were steel. I would yet cover my face with a pillow to muffle the cries. And during those times of deep despair, somehow I looked up. I may not have been happy with God at the time, but I chose to not turn from him, and I chose to not be defined by my deep despairing thoughts and feelings. I chose to rise above them. I didn't pretend they don't exist. So that, I believe, is a very important part of a healthy recipe for being healthy in mind and body, is not denying these difficult emotions, but choosing and determining to not be defined by them. Don't pretend they're not there. Live through them.
David, it's hard to live through them, especially when a child, your own, is taken from you. And like I mentioned before in the introduction, when we watch things on TV or we hear of things far from us, we say, oh, that's happening to them. And you look at it like if it's a movie. It's outside of you. But when it comes closer to home, it hits you harder. And then it becomes a reality. It becomes real. It's hard to live through it. It's hard to walk that road. How did you deal with it? Because you said you made a choice. You made a decision to still carry on in your faith. You could have given up. You could have cursed God. You could have said, where are you? And decided to leave the church, give up on your faith, you know. And then what just came to mind is, what example would that have set for your children and your family as a father and husband? You know, these are questions that are coming to me now that I talk about it. But at the time, how do you deal with that? Because you want to create vengeance. Your child got HIV as a result of a donor. You know, I mean, you could have done so many other things. And I mean, a lot of things I'm sure would have crossed your mind. We are only human. Because when our child is taken from us, whether it's through something, you know, that like happened with your son, or somebody come into your house, or somebody kills your child, you really are not thinking logically and saying, oh God, I'm going to put this into your hands and leave it there. No. Thoughts are going to cross your mind. And I honestly think the relationship that I have with God too is one where he understands. I think he does know the kind of thoughts that will cross our minds. He does know, but he's probably asking for us, not even probably, he's asking for us to have patience, to be the forgiving type of person. Because one of the things I've always learned, and I ask myself every day when a situation is, you know, I'm confronted with a situation, is what would Jesus do? You know, if I have to make a decision, what would Jesus do? You know, and another question is, who is going to benefit from my actions? Is it God or is it the devil? You know, those are two questions that I ask myself all the time. So tell me, as a father, husband, why didn't you just throw your faith away and strike vengeance?
You know, I would say, Corinne, that the first response of a man when he feels as though not so much himself, but his family, his innocent child has been offended, has been violated. And frankly, I used a very strong word I won't use on the air, but I actually in anger said to one of my friends, I felt as though my son had been, and I used the word violated, but a different word. Well, the point is this, the anger, the rage that was in my heart was almost intractable. It was irrepressible, and I will tell you this, if it weren't for friends, wife, others that were patient with me, that would allow me to express my deep hurt, shame, anger, uncertainty, question, I don't know if I would have maintained my sanity, because ultimately the time when it really was tested was late at night, when those people weren't around to listen, when there was no one there but me and God and my anger. And I was alone, and I couldn't sleep. Well, I reached a point where I realized that I was going to be consumed and eaten up with this rage if I just continued as I was going. So I decided I have to do something. And I will tell you, I will admit to you that the plan of putting camouflage on my face, getting my Bowie knife and getting in my truck and driving. I didn't know where I would go because I didn't know where the donor was in the Detroit area is all I knew. Go find him and take care of him. That crossed my mind. That came to my mind. I'm telling you it did. Yeah. But I knew that that was no good. The scripture says, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. And I looked at who God is. I looked at who I was. I looked at who this person was. And I began to realize that I could have pity on him, that I could realize that he knew he had at-risk behavior, 37-year-old male, according to the American Red Cross that gave me much information about it at the time. But what good would it do if I tried to go seek vengeance? My wife and I prayed through, wept through, talked it through so many times, and I finally said one day, I choose to forgive this individual because I know that it's the right thing to do. My emotion tells me, no, I should not do it. But in my mind, I know it's the right thing to do. It does not mean we are saying what he did was okay. No, what he did was inexcusable. In fact, in my book, toward the latter part, I discuss this issue, and I have this quote. I say, his actions, the donor's, his action was inexcusable, but it was forgivable. And that's really the way all of us are with God. We've all offended him in ways that are inexcusable, and yet he forgives us still. And I thought, I've been forgiven so much, how can I not forgive him? Especially knowing I'm not admitting what he did was okay. I'm saying rather, no, it was heinously wrong. And I turned him over to the authorities, and the authorities didn't do anything. turn them over to God, and it's not my business anymore. I can release it and let it go. My emotion may fight me again over the years, but I still make a decision. Let me tell you about an aunt we have who heard this news. That is, she heard that my wife and I had made a decision and made it public that we had chosen to forgive the donor. This was after our son died, and the autopsy that I directed does indicate that there are some antiretroviral, that's HIV medications, adverse side effects that may have been a factor in a sudden ventricular fibrillation, a sudden electrical interruption of the child's heart, which likely is what caused his immediate death. So this aunt heard we had chosen to forgive the donor. She became so angry, she called my mother. My mother's name is Joan. And she said, Aunt Joan, I heard that David and Kathy said that they choose to forgive the donor. No, how can they do that? They need to hunt him down like a dog that he is and kill him. And my mother just said quietly, listen, we understand how you feel and we agree, and yet they believe it was the right thing to do. They're not saying it was okay for him to give blood when he knew he had at-risk behavior that tested negative but was still positive. But they know it's right for their own emotional health and well-being, because bitterness is like a cancer. It grows insidiously. Yes. It's invisible, but it grows and grows until its little tentacles wrap around your heart. And we're not that way. We are going to live victorious. We are going to live with joy, and we're going to go on. In fact, 3 months after this child unexpectedly just suddenly died at a picnic, actually he was running around and playing at a church picnic on a Sunday afternoon. 3 months later, we don't know if we dare call her his younger sister, but the next child, a girl, was conceived. And I will tell you something interesting. During this fifth child's pregnancy, I struggled with a new emotional experience that surprised me. In fact, going back to when the first child, when Caleb was born, one emotion I struggled with as a father is difficult to admit, but it's shame. Now, one might hear that and say, no, how would you dare say you felt shame about your son being born with congenital defects, anomalies? That's being disloyal to your son. I don't dispute that statement, but I can't ignore the emotion. I struggled with shame when my child was born. Now, it's not logical, and it's not reasonable, but it's an emotion. Emotions aren't always reasonable and logical. You just admit them and then choose to not be controlled by them. So enough of that. So here we are, 4 years later, the new baby's conceived, and during the pregnancy, I fussed, I fretted. Here's why. What do you do when you're pregnant? Well, you pray for a healthy baby, don't you? In fact, people meet you and say, oh, you're expecting, that's wonderful. Do you know what you're going to have? And then before you can answer, meaning boy or girl, presumably, before you can answer, they answer for you. And they say, oh, no, I know, you don't care, as long as it's healthy. When people said that all during the pregnancy of this baby, I wanted to scream. I wanted to grab them by the shirt collar and tighten my grip and say, no. What do you mean, as long as it's not healthy, as long as it's healthy? What if the child isn't healthy, according to what you think and you determine to be normal health? What will you do? Send him back? This isn't a restaurant where your meal is not cooked properly and you send it back. That's not the way things work. This is a child. This is a life. What are you going to do? So I struggled during that pregnancy. Anytime I prayed for a healthy baby, I felt disloyal to my son, Caleb. Now, that's not logical. But it's an emotion I experienced, and I had to live through it and not be conquered by it. And I'm telling you, it might sound ridiculous, but it was actually, at the time, very difficult. Well, one last thing about the God not making sense is this. Years later, my wife finally confided in me one day that she had spoken with her best friend at that time and said to her, I'm afraid David may turn from his faith and turn away from the Lord. And you know, she never said that to me during those tumultuous, difficult years. But I think she just, with her mother's heart and wife's heart, she was concerned and she prayed. And ultimately, certainly that did not happen, not so much because I was all that smart, but because God continued present. He is good and he changes not, even when he doesn't make sense to you. Because many people have said, God always makes sense. And I said to them, I agree. He always makes sense in his infinite knowledge and his immutable character. He is good. But sometimes in our lives, as you said, Corrine, when these tragedies strike very close to home, we need to be honest and admit, God, this doesn't make sense, and I don't understand you, and I don't understand why you would allow this now. Sometimes when we say that to him, he may answer us. Other times, he may answer with silence. And I think it's at those times when his answer is silent, when the true test of our character and our faith is proven genuine, and we have the opportunity to say, oh God, I don't understand. I don't agree that this was the right course of action to let the child die and let the donor go free, whatever it may be. Nonetheless, I still trust in you.
Wow. That's a great way to end this program, David. I mean, anybody listening to this should feel more empowered and inspired by your story and by the strength, not coming from within you, but within, you know, what is passed on from God to you, because we don't have the strength to deal with these things. We have to go to a higher power. And for us, it's God. For other people, maybe somebody else or something else. But whatever it is that makes you garner that strength, that conviction, is what you need to hold on to. And like you said, your friends and family, when they were not around and you were alone in the silence, that's when it that's when it hits you. That's when the test of faith is, you know. It's just you and him there, you know. It's just you and God. And that in that silent moment is when things really start to happen and start to unfold, and you really know who you are in that moment and who he is in that moment. And I would encourage anyone listening to this to spend more time in silence, meditate, connect with God, get to know him, get to understand how he communicates. He's so amazing. And just know that he loves you no matter what. You know, when I think about the love that God has for me, there's nobody else that can love me the way he does. I mean, I felt it, I know it, I feel it every day. And I judge everything. I judge everything according to that love. I judge everything according to that love. And I'm like, this is love. I know what love is. If somebody's telling me that they love me, I'm like, you don't know what love is, okay? You know? So I judge everything. He's my reference point, and I so love him. And I'm glad that you never faltered. I mean, you did question. You did have thoughts running through your mind. I'm glad you didn't, you know, fall to that. Yeah, you didn't give in to that, and that you still have your faith, because your wife was worried. And I know if that had happened, boy, I don't know where you guys would be today. So you did the right thing. Exactly. I don't know where you would be today. So I thank you so much, and I know you're getting, you know, you're doing a giveaway, sorry, and I am certainly going to buy your book. Believe it or not, David, I'm going to get your book, because we all need to search for the answer some way, somehow, and I think your story is really going to touch the lives of many people out there going through their own challenges and issues. And I would encourage everyone to get a copy of your book and to connect with you, just to learn, to share, to, you know, we need to come together in these times. All sorts of things are happening around the world. Don't think don't think that it cannot reach your doorstep, not because it's on TV. It can reach your doorstep, and this is why we have to keep praying every day to cover us, to protect all of us. And don't just pray for yourself. Pray for everybody else in the world. You don't need to know them, but God knows them. Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate the time you spent with me. We're coming up to the end, and I don't want us to get cut off. But I really want to say to you, I thank you for being in my life, and I thank God for being in your life. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Corrine. It's been a pleasure for me to be with you today.